Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about why they became motivated to act on climate change, what they are doing to help, and their vision for the future. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. For episode 24, my guest is Scott Peters, member of the United States Congress at the U.S. House of Representatives, representing California's 52nd District, which includes the cities of Coronado, Poway, and most of northern San Diego, which is where I call home. Scott was first elected in 2012 and has worked across the aisle to fix a broken Congress and stand up for San Diego's military and veterans community. Scott currently serves on the House Committee on the Budget and the House Energy and Commerce Committee, where he advocates for investment in basic scientific research, supports the military's goals to enhance their energy security, and fights for common sense healthcare reforms that work for families and small business owners. And recently, Scott unveiled a climate playbook. Kathy, can you explain the climate playbook?
I know what climate playbook means. Because of climate change, scientists of the future are going to get really good at controlling weather. And different cities will have their own teams of scientists that compete against each other using weather systems in a big dome. So first they'll start with like lightning storms, and then it'll progress to hurricanes and tornadoes. Each one of them will have their own climate playbook.
That's great, Kathy. It'll give a whole new meaning to the Carolina Hurricanes beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-2. Kathy is the author of The Trouble with Talent, being released June 18th by the Kensington Books Lyrical Imprint. Written long before the college admissions scandal hit the headlines, Kathy wrote about rich parents desperate to get their children into top universities using a college fixer, and maybe even resorting to murder. San Diego's Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore will be hosting a book launch on Saturday, June 22nd, 2019, at 4 p.m. Stop by for some signed books, Q&A with Kathy, wine, desserts, and even to see me. Signed copies will be available at Mysterious Galaxy, or check the book out online along with Shana Krivat's delightful book of short stories, Tales of Mundane Magic, and Jeremy and Jocelyn Krivat's dramatic memoir, In Sickness and in Health. Just type Krivat when you are searching on Amazon to see them all. Scott's Climate Playbook is actually a comprehensive compendium of legislation Congress can act on now to take immediate steps to reduce greenhouse gases to slow and reverse the effects of climate change. It outlines how to reach targets like reduced emissions, increased resiliency, and energy efficiency. Scott is clear that this is only the beginning of a conversation, and the playbook invites new ideas on how to improve these bills, which are mostly bipartisan and thus have a good shot at becoming law. Congressperson Peters is a former environmental lawyer and member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. It is clear from our conversation that he is dedicated to combating climate change and fostering renewable energy. Take it away, James Henry Vidal. Welcome to Climate Champions. This is Lee Krivat. I'm here with Scott Peters, United States member of the U.S. Congress at the House of Representatives, representing California's 52nd District, which happens to be my district. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Thanks for having me, Lee. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here. And first, I would just like to ask, I know you're very active with regard to climate change mitigation. Is there a significant moment that happened, a significant memory that moved you into that direction?
So I tend to be someone, I say that I have a heart, but I lead with my head. And I remember in the very late 70s, one of my professors, Margaret McKeon, talking about the increase of carbon in the atmosphere and how that was a concern. And people may not realize that this is old knowledge by now, but even Jimmy Carter was talking about a 50-cent per gallon gas tax to get people to move away from that and put solar panels on the White House that President Reagan removed. So I've been conscious of it for a long time. You know, I think the moment's come where there's more interest in it and more concern about it. and there's an opportunity to really do something about it.
So what really made you say now is the time, and when was that time?
Well, a lot of things. I've been thinking about pollution and climate for a long time and practiced environmental law for 15 years, so I was always around the issues. I got involved in city politics. I think I was the only person who both endorsed the downtown ballpark in the late 90s and something called the Rural Heritage and Watershed Initiative, which would have preserved large lot zoning in the backcountry and prevented urbanization in the backcountry. The idea is to minimize the amount of travel that people are taking by car and to generate more density in the city. And that's an idea that whose time has come too. But I wanted to leave the practice of law and get on the city council to work on things like that.
Why is it personally important to you?
I'm a big lover of nature and the outdoors. One of the great things about living in San Diego is even though you're in the city, you have this great access to the ocean, you have great access to trails, and it's only an hour to get into the mountains and the national forests. So I think that's a great feature of living here. But it's threatened by climate change. And I'm concerned about the persistent droughts, sea level rise, more intense wildfires, the way that pests of trees aren't killed off anymore because of the change in climate. And I'm concerned about preserving that, not just for the enjoyment of my children and grandchildren, but also for their health and well-being. I think it's something worth fighting for.
And when you meet people that doubt the existence of climate change or doubt the impact of climate change, how do you attempt to explain it to them in a way they can understand?
Most people I come across understand it. They think it's real. The problem we encounter more often is they don't think it's the most important thing. It's the existential threat to the planet right now. And so I talk to them about it. Every once in a while you'll meet somebody who's been on watching a certain kind of TV network and says, oh, this is something that's been cooked up by politicians or the Chinese. And I just confront that. But, I think we have to be honest about it. I think I also have to be optimistic about it. And I'm not inclined to gloom and doom. I don't think that appeals to people. I think we have to think of ways to problem solve around it. And that's kind of how I focus on it. There's a lot you can do to make your community better that also has a benefit to the climate. And if we can match those things up, I think we'd make some progress.
Yeah, I tend to sit not in the middle, but on both sides. Sometimes I'm doom and gloom because I can see that the threat is very real and it's happening quicker than many anticipated. But on the other hand, there's so much we could do to fight it.
Right, right.
Just get in the right direction together.
Yeah, exactly. I have an example for you of something we did, which was great,
sure.
You can check out. We did the roundabouts in Bird Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So Bird Rock's a community in the south part of La Jolla through which runs La Jolla Boulevard, which was an 83-foot-wide swath of pavement. It was like a highway through a neighborhood. It had really high traffic speeds, so it was dangerous. The restaurants couldn't survive there because, no one wanted to stop. It always looked bad. It was never maintained. So when I was running for office, it occurred to me, and people said at the door, we should fix that. So we went through a whole placemaking with a guy that I hired, Dan Burden, who's a walkability expert. He walked the neighborhood with the residents, let them come up with these ideas to slow traffic with modern roundabouts, which convey traffic more efficiently than a stoplight. It doesn't create the kind of traffic hazards that they do. And we remade the neighborhood so that, you can have sidewalk cafes. It's pretty. We landscape with native California landscaping that the neighbors chose. And we put in some housing. And the benefit, of course, is that now you have a walkable community where people don't have to drive. If we can create a lot of places like that, that's the kind of thing that gets people out of their cars. It's a bikeable area. It's a walkable area. So we did. We increased housing. We redid the road. All in a way that made a better neighborhood and a more climate-friendly one.
I have a friend who also has a podcast, and he has a very long commute, so he's taken to sleeping in his car instead of doing the commute during the week. And he spends some of that time working out, getting in shape.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Sleeping in your car, that's a tough duty.
So you gave one example of something you've done, but what in general are you doing to fight climate change?
Well, I've been working on it a long time. So in Congress right now, there's a whole panoply of things we could be working on. But the concern I have is that I think the politics is getting in the way. There's a lot of members of Congress and members of the public who have enthusiastically endorsed the Green New Deal, which is an aspirational document. It's got a couple things in there that I'm not that comfortable with in terms of guaranteed jobs, the federal government guaranteeing jobs for people. So I haven't signed on to it, but I think the other fault of it is that it is a Democrat-only, pretty left-wing-only document, and I'm proud to be that, but that's not going to get us solutions. So I've taken it as my lane to be the person who tries to build coalitions around solutions. And I created something called the Climate Playbook, which is a collection of not just my bills, but all sorts of bills proposed by Democrats and Republicans. Many of them are bipartisan in any number of different areas of fighting for climate mitigation or adaptation. So reducing emissions from economic sectors, whether it's manufacturing, electricity, transportation, pricing carbon emissions, providing the economy with incentives, promoting energy efficiency, investing heavily in research and development, basic scientific research into things like storage, carbon capture, negative emissions technologies, and investing in adaptation and resiliency. So those are all the kinds of things that I think we need to work on. And I can find bipartisan support for many aspects of those as we, you know, work toward trying to bring a Sacramento kind of awareness to Washington, D.C., which is not just a long geographical span, but a long political and awareness span as well.
It made me feel good when I looked at the playbook and saw how many of the proposals were bipartisan.
Right.
That was exciting. What was also exciting was how much there was. Most of the topics I know about and talk about were there.
Right. And I think that's the other thing that, frankly, not to be political, but turning the majority from Republican to Democrat had some effect on that, because in Congress we've been working on a lot of these things for a long time, but if we couldn't get Speaker Ryan to let us put it on the floor, we never got a vote on them. Well, now there's more open lanes to work on climate, and so that's what we're doing. The other thing, it's very subtle, but I would point out, is that the Republicans, even the administrator of the EPA, have stopped saying that they don't think the climate change is happening. And they've stopped saying that they don't think that it's human activity driven. They acknowledge that now. So once you get to that point, it's really about logic and trying to find solutions and trying to find areas where, you know, maybe in energy efficiency or in resiliency, you might be able to work with somebody. The other thing that's happening is around the country, people are seeing the effects. Most prominently in Florida, where that's where the Republicans who are concerned about climate are coming from. When the streets of Miami are wet and it's not raining, you know, we know something's happening with sea level rise, and their constituents and their voters can see that. I think increasingly you're going to see more interest from the people who have been affected by extreme weather events around the country, even in traditionally red states.
As I do these interviews, I'm hearing so many stories, not only around the United States about impacts, but around the world that happen that people don't even talk about. Tell me some of the challenges you've had trying to move your climate mitigation activities forward.
Well, I mean, I think I said, but when the Congress was run by John Boehner and Paul Ryan, it was harder.
Yes.
But even today, I think we're getting in our own way fighting over this Green New Deal. It's become kind of a litmus test about whether you're interested in climate. I've been working on climate for 20 years. You know, I would put my environmental record in San Diego up against anybody. So it's a surprise to me that we're, you know, if we don't sign this document, we're not for climate action. I'm for climate action explicitly with Republicans, because I understand that I don't get any action unless I get Republicans. You need 60 votes in the Senate to get anything passed. You need the president to sign it. I can't bet the planet on the results of the next election. I got to get to work now to find Republicans and Democrats who will help me on these issues. And that's a consciousness that I think Congress must have lost its muscle memory on working together, because, you know, it's slow going in terms of getting past the politics and onto the problem solving.
So I have two daughters, 25 and 23, and when I talk to them, I try to represent a view that we have to work together to ultimately solve the problem. And it's not that they don't agree, but they just want to take action.
Right.
So they see the Green New Deal as a way of saying we really, really care.
Right. And I think that if you take a step back and you said, okay, if we pass the Green New Deal today, what do we do tomorrow? And it's all the stuff that's in the climate playbook. So rather than focus on a Democrat-only, somewhat divisive statement of intent. Let's start listening to each other. Let's start working with each other. We really care about the planet. We really love the planet. Let's treat each other with the same love and care and see if we can't find solutions. And that's what I think is missing right now in Washington.
The positive thing, though, is that the Green New Deal is something that people can talk about. It brings the topic front and center. And combined with the playbook, right, you can see that there's an issue we want to solve and an issue that we can solve.
Right. Totally. And by the way, we've cross-referenced the playbook with the Green New Deal. So you can see.
I saw that.
This is where the Green New Deal says we should go, because it's not a conflict, really. These are complementary efforts. The passion and the drive from the Green New Deal is terrific. But if we don't get to work on solutions that are legislative, that we can get passed, we can get even a president, maybe even not this president, maybe this president, to sign, then the Green New Deal will have done nothing to save the planet. All that enthusiasm will not have been put to good use. So let's take that enthusiasm and apply it to solving problems. And that's going to take a lot of listening. It's going to take patience with one another. That I think Washington's lost a little bit of capacity for that. It's become so partisan. We have to break through that if we want to save the planet.
I agree 100%. What about a success or some successes that you're extremely proud of?
Well, I think Bird Rock is one of the coolest things that we did. It's a nationally recognized road diet. It's probably the most significant one in this area. And it shows that you can make big change with good community leadership and, you know, with a little bit of imagination. So I think that sets a table for a lot of discussion around transit and transportation in San Diego. And I'm excited to be involved in that from my position now. One thing I'm really proud of, too, which is a San Diego-related thing, is the military's effort around renewable energy. And I don't know if you know, the Navy has a budget and they have a mission. And when the price of oil would spike, they still had to fulfill the mission, but now they had to spend more money on petroleum. The Department of Defense is the biggest consumer of fossil fuels in the world. The Navy decided, not because they were tree huggers, but because they were concerned about this, their reliance on fuel that could vary in price, they said, we're going to go renewable. And so under Secretary Mabus, they outlined a plan over 10 years to be half renewable energy. And, you know, think about it. The Navy's always been the energy innovator, from sails to coal to nuclear and now to renewables. They are starting to build hybrid ships that can go up to 12 knots on electricity and over that on conventional fuel, like a hybrid car. And they can stay out longer. They actually perform better than the conventional ships. We announced the biggest purchase of renewable fuel by any federal department from Sempra, solar energy from Arizona that's going to provide half the power that the Navy and Marines need in the West Coast on the land side. We're all celebrating that. And then they're also going to advance biofuels. And so we launched the Great Green Fleet from Coronado in North Island, and a ship was powered by advanced biofuels derived from beef fat. So the reason I consider a little bit my success is that I led the fight in the Armed Services Committee, which was my first assignment, to prevent some of the folks from Texas and Oklahoma from stopping research into alternative fuels. And even though we were in the minority back then, we found enough Republicans to say, no, let's let this happen. Because the Navy, they were not doing this because they were tree huggers. They did it because they were committed to the business plan. Similarly with the Marines, you know, one of the most dangerous things we do is move petroleum across the desert. And when those convoys are attacked, we lose soldiers and we lose Marines. So the commandant, kind of a funny story, he comes to my office when I'm on the Armed Services Committee. The commandant wants to meet, you know, the new members of the Congress. I've been in Congress for, I don't know, 20 minutes, and I hear the commandant's coming in. And he comes in, sits at my conference table with all the other Marine generals he brings, and they're all in brass, because they've got brass on them. That's why they call them that, probably. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a big deal. I said, what is he going to want to talk to me about? Is it going to be the budget? Is it going to be personnel, sequester? And he says, Congressman. I said, yes, sir. He says, I want to talk to you about solar energy. The reason is because it is so dangerous to move these convoys. They decided instead of using generators, they're going to use solar panels to power their bunkers. They have solar panels on backpacks to power small appliances. They weigh less than the batteries he used to make his troops carry. They want to do desalination with solar power, and they don't have that yet. But they're doing all this innovation around energy because it's good for the business case. And we wanted not to get in the way of that. So the Armed Services Committee ended up being supportive of all that. And, you know, we have a better military for it, for that innovation. And we will see commercial applications out of that are great.
So I have to talk a little bit now about Pi Energy. They are local here. They're in Sorrento Valley. They have a super lightweight, super inexpensive material for solar.
Well, we'd love to visit them. You should let them know. I'd love to come see it.
Yeah, they are on the verge of the breakthrough. I will connect you if you want. Yeah. What about your vision for the future? Where do you see the world in the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years?
You know, I thought really heavily about leaving Congress. Someday I'll do that, but there's still so much work to do there. So I've decided to stick it out. The federal government is this, a little partisan, but the Republicans in the federal government are the last folks to get it. I was able to visit the Vatican and address the Pontifical Academy of Sciences on climate change. And my assigned job, I went with Jerry Brown, but my assigned job, who got to boast about all the things that he did, my assignment was to explain what's wrong with Congress. It's not that businesses aren't reacting, state and local governments are reacting, other countries are reacting and acting. And it's not that, you know, we have to do something in Congress, but we would make such a big difference if we did. So my goal is just to start to open up these lanes. I've got a bill called the Disaster Act that's going to pass Congress that I'm co-sponsoring with Mark Meadows, who may be the most conservative member of Congress. He's the head of the Tea Party.
Yes.
You know, genial enough guy, but it has to do with accounting for disaster spending. So I was bothered when Superstorm Sandy was my first vote, with $60 billion off budget. I was thinking a lot about the climate implications of things like that. Mark Meadows was also bothered. He was bothered by the budget side of it. And so together we've come up with a way so that the federal government can more responsibly budget for these disasters as we expect them, because they're not budgeting at all for them. And there's an adaptation measure that the two of us are doing together. And I'm going to look for opportunities to do all of those things in energy efficiency and in research. Dave McKinley from West Virginia and I both agree on the importance. He's a Republican, West Virginia, coal state, on the importance of doing serious research. You know, a ways off to pricing carbon, but I think that's really the goal, that to send that signal throughout the entire economy that we want you to innovate away and substitute away from fossil fuels. But the goal is to get to carbon neutral by mid-century.
Where do you think we are as a world in 2050?
You know, I have to say I'm such an optimist. I mean, I think one of the best evidences that some of the best evidence that I'm an optimist is that I live in San Diego and I get on a plane every week to go to Washington, D.C. and work in Congress.
Yeah.
You know, this is a pretty nice place to live. It's not that good a job if you don't get anything done. I think we're smart enough to do something about this. I really am concerned about the current presidential leadership and the withdrawal in general of America from world leadership. You could make a lot of criticisms of President Obama, and you know, the Iran deal wasn't perfect, and maybe we should have got more out of the Paris deal, but we were engaged, you know, in Trans-Pacific Partnership in terms of trade. We were engaged in leading the world. The world needs us in that position. I still think they do. I don't want to cede leadership to China, which will have lower standards than us. I don't want to give up our values. You know, I think it's important to rectify this presidential issue. But I do believe in America, and I think that people, if we listen to one another and care about one another, you know, it's likely that we will solve this problem. You know, we're sitting here, you know, around the time of the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and you look at those people from the 40s and how they didn't think twice about throwing in for their country. That they lied about their age not to get out of serving, but to get into serving. That's a kind of patriotism I think we need to remind ourselves of and look for again.
DistribuTech, which is the largest U.S. gathering of utility professionals, was in New Orleans, where the World War II Museum is. So I was able to tour it, and it was incredible to me how the country got on the same page so quickly.
Right.
And people sacrificed so much all over the country. Climate change is a big threat. So I think we need to get on the same page like that to do it.
Right. And also, I think we can't do that by yelling at each other, Lee. You know, the politics today are very divisive. And some of us are just going to have to let go of that and realize that, you know, we may disagree seriously about this issue or that issue, but that doesn't make us bad people. And I think it's gotten too hostile. I think there's some, you know, there's a lot of reasons for the hostility among people. But, you know, like if we care about our country and our kids, we're going to have to figure out a way to care about each other again. At least with respect, at least enough so that we can deal with this problem. And that means listening to farmers. It means you know, figuring out how to work with oil and gas companies as they transition away. It means taking care of coal miners who aren't going to have jobs. I mean, coal is the one thing we can't tolerate. We got to stop now. And fortunately, the markets are taking care of that. But the environmental movement's got to take care of those people, because there's going to be a lot of change. It's just like with automation or just any other kind of disruption, globalization, climate change. And the economics of climate change are going to have a lot of tough effects on people, and they're going to want to hold on to the way it was in the past. You know, if change was easy, it would have already happened. Part of our job is, in the environmental movement, is to take care of those people who are going to be adversely affected by this. As many opportunities as there will be that are positive, there's going to be dislocations that are negative, and I think we have to care about those people.
Do you have any questions for me?
What do you think I should do next?
I'm with an organization called Gridwise Alliance. Mm-hmm. And I've been taken on the Hill by Gridwise, and I have talked to people in Congress, members of Congress. And we did really well. They were really interested in what we had to say, but we didn't have an ask. And mm-hmm. I think I've made that mistake again. I don't have an ask.
Well, here's my ask. So what we've done with the Climate Playbook is we've also engaged a number of experts around the country through meetings, through Slack, which is a information sharing application, to tell us, you know, which bill works, how does it need to be fixed, in your area of expertise, how can we improve this? So we'd ask you to be involved with the grid. I think there's a lot of opportunity in the grid, because there's a lot of reasons to modernize the grid that aren't just efficiency, it's also reliability and security. So if you'd be interested in helping with that, we'd love to have you, because we want to be smart about it. We want to do the right thing.
I'd be happy to be involved. I am involved.
Okay.
And I'll send you some stuff that I'm doing, and maybe we can continue our conversation.
Okay, great.
About it. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I am very excited about the San Diego Padres. So if you want to talk about that anytime.
Uh-oh. I'm a Mets fan.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They haven't been making me happy for a long time.
I know. Mets fans are always miserable.
Yeah. I still look back at 86. Okay, then I'm going to wrap this up.
Sure.
And I'm going to do it with a rap. San Diego has mountains and forests and trails, the best you've ever seen. And you got your inspiration from Margaret Maheen. You want to take the climate change effort even higher, because you want to avoid intense wildfire. The Democratic document you maybe feel is not so real, and that's why it's hard to back the Green New Deal. And so the action that you took was putting out there the climate playbook. When I asked about a vision, you were excited to see the United States take advantage of economic opportunity. And as I sat across from you, you sat there with your smile, but you also talked about working as hard as you can to get agreement across the aisle.
That's top of the charts, Lee. That's really something.
Scott is focused on getting a Sacramento-like awareness to Washington, D.C. He pointed out that Republicans have stopped saying that they don't think climate change is happening, and stopped saying that they don't think it is human activity driven. This change opens the door to finding solutions where you can work together, because to get action now, you need both Republicans and Democrats. I was a little nervous sitting down with Congressman Peters, but my training in improvisation helped me face the fear and let out the Lee. I highly recommend improvisation for everyone. It helps you to be you. Look for workshops in your neighborhood. And if you are in San Diego and want some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv, or both. To confirm specific dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, please visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. Scott is focusing on finding Republicans and Democrats to help him on climate issues now. I loved it when he said, "I can't bet the planet on the results of the next election. We have to get past the politics and onto the problem. We really care about the planet. We really love the planet. Let's treat each other with the same love and care." Scott, if we can do that, we can do anything, including mitigating climate change.